Welcome, everyone. It's another great day in Los Angeles, and you are listening to The Janet Foster Show. Welcome. This is the show where you get real talk that you can actually act on. We just don't talk about it. We encourage you to be about it. And right now, you can interact with me on Facebook at Janet Foster and on Instagram and Twitter at Janet D. Foster. And that's D for Deborah. So Janet D. Foster. And throughout the show, I definitely will be looking at all sources of social media. And so if you've got some questions, since we're live right now, you can certainly hit me up on social media, all of them. I've got everything open. It looks like Grand Central Station in here, but I'm watching everything. And before we get into everything, I just want to let you know that I want to thank everyone for listening, and thank you so much for all of your kind thoughts and your positive thoughts on social media, and how you've reached out and how you've stayed in touch during this great transition. I think a couple weeks ago, I mentioned that we've moved to a new home, and our new home is at weplayradio.com, and I'm having a wonderful time being a part of a special group. And certainly, I think as listeners that have been following me since the summer when the show started, you're going to find that things are going to get bigger and better, more talk, more opportunities to interact. And before we went on the fall, kind of the mid-fall break, I mentioned that we would have a opportunity for listeners to kind of ride shotgun with me on a show. We are looking to start that up, and we're looking to looking at people right now. I've been watching social media as I've been interacting with you, and we definitely will kick off with some fans, some JFO fans. That's one of my friends said, we've got to find a name. So JFO fans for now. And I think a lot of you are much more creative than I am, since I just tend to stick with some of the hard news lines that sometimes I'm not that creative. But we will have those opportunities where fans will be a part of the show with me. We'll interview a guest, and as well as I may even interview the fan. Or what seems to be happening a lot is you guys are, when you're interacting with me, you're asking me a lot of questions, and you want my opinions, and I thank you for that. And I'm going to oblige tonight again with that, because there were just so many between the last time, the last show, and of course a lot of the events that have gone on. And I know quite a few of you are from different parts of the country. So what I have noticed, particularly with our fans, our listeners who engage with me on Facebook, a lot of you are coming to the page and you're looking for the top trending news story. And I appreciate you doing that, because one of the things that I do as a freelance journalist is I'm watching a lot of current events. A lot of times I have accepted writing assignments, either as a co-writer or I've provided research on something. And a lot of these top trending news stories are things that I'm watching, either for new projects, as well as even coming and bringing good talk to you, so that we can all be informed. So I appreciate those interactions. And what I have noticed is that I've started seeing a lot more individuals from other parts of the world. And I know that a lot of, particularly when the show started during the summer, I did a lot of international news stories, particularly in the Caribbean, and also parts of Europe, and also in the Middle East. I've talked a little bit about that. And so the show is growing, And also, I got to give another big shout out to the baby boomers. You're finding me. I don't know how you're finding me, but I'm glad that you are. And a lot of you are sharing, and I welcome you all. And Gen Xers and millennials, I know this is sort of, our discussions are kind of based on some of the things that we understand, but we've got some cool baby boomers and a lot of guests that I've had on in the past. Some of them have been some cool baby boomers and of course, cool Gen Xers and millennials. And I like that we have this diverse audience because there are so many other shows that are so segmented, and a lot of things that have been happening that you want my feedback on, and I'm going to give that to you. I do want to give some shout outs, some Twitter shout outs to some fans who they're listeners and they're fans. The Old Man Club. I just gonna give you guys a shout out. You put me on your list of awesome peeps to follow. Thank you so much for that, and I will try to uphold your recommendation to be an awesome peep. I'm going to make sure that I stay an awesome peep. And then Reactive, the group, you've added me to your baby boomer list. So I guess that's where maybe I'm getting the shout outs from the baby boomers. But thank you so much for adding me. And Dolores Green, I got to say, thank you for all of your tweets and all of your commentary. I enjoyed the things that you shared with me. And then I'm from the South. I was raised by Southern parents, and one of the things that my Southern parents have taught me is that people who don't agree with you, they make you stronger. And I just want to give a shout out to Rob Actis, because, there have been things that you've disagreed with me on, but you still show me love, so I'm showing you love back. And so I look forward to the Twitter dialogue that we've gotten into. And for those of you who are listening, and I know that a lot of times there are people who don't agree with some of the things, some of the responses that I've made to some of the questions that you're asking me. Be on the lookout. Maybe I may ask you to ride shotgun with me, and you can share the mic with me, and we can kind of talk about that. But I just wanted to give out those quick shout outs there on Twitter, because you guys have given me a lot of love there. And thank you so much for that. Now, the questions that you've asked me, there are four specific questions. And of course, if I'm going to try to plow through everything during today's show. And of course, the first one, the first question that you want to hear my thoughts on. That was mainly the question. And then people wanted my take, not only as a journalist, but also as a Southern California resident, as it relates to the horrible tragedy that happened in San Bernardino, really, literally a week ago. It'll be a week ago tomorrow. And it's something that, I was watching it unfold, and I had several colleagues that were either near the scene, they were dispatched in all, they work in all different mediums within journalism. Of course, being here in LA, it's the number two media market in the United States, which meant a lot of our television media, and for what's for us is our local news, became national news, and that we're used to that here in LA, and particularly journalists, even me being a freelance journalist, and that I work in multiple mediums. A lot of times that we know things that we write here, being on the ground here in Los Angeles, can be national news, and at the same time, it's local news. The terrorist attack, and if you've been following my Facebook page, from the moment it happened, I referred to it as a terrorist attack, not based on the FBI standards or Homeland Security standards, but just my own view is that anyone who basically ambushes someone else, that's Janet's definition. And I will tell you, as not only as a journalist, but as a resident of Southern California, as information started to come out about what happened in San Bernardino, I couldn't help but obviously be afraid. That's the first human emotion. But the second was to be concerned about the signs. And there appears to have been signs. And now we've got Homeland Security and the FBI, where every day in our local news here, we're learning things. And we're also now starting this week, we started to see a lot of first-person accounts from individuals who were in that room in the middle of that horrific situation that happened, and hearing them. And one of the things that I'd say that really takes me aback is the strength that a lot of these survivors have in telling these stories and being in a room and all of a sudden dealing with a situation like that, and how they're recalling it and allowing cameras to be on them, or allowing to tell their story live. I have so much respect and admiration for that. And as we're learning more things about the individuals who were in that room, not only particularly those individuals who lost their lives that day, but you hear of acts of heroism. This week, we're hearing a lot of that because a lot of the survivors are talking about people. And, the thing as a journalist that, and my take on these attacks is that the stories that we tell, and the journalists here in Southern California are doing it very well. They're allowing it to be very organic and be very, very first person oriented. And they're allowing survivors to share their thoughts. And one of the things that I've noticed from every survivor's conversation has been not only gratitude, it's been gratitude of people who were in the room with them as they were coming out. That kind of gratitude. And the thing that I hope as a public that people continue to listen as they hear survivor stories is that we need to think of how we can continue to make things better for them as survivors, but also at the same time, I think come up with sensible solutions for preventing something like this. And, as journalists, those are some of the things that, some of the questions that we ask individuals in public office or with these press conferences and things of that nature. And I will say that the San Bernardino police, as well as the sheriffs and the California Highway Patrol, there were multiple law enforcement agencies that were in coordination. The press conferences were, I think, very informative. They were factual. And I also, I can appreciate in terms of having to rely on the information they provide, I can appreciate the thoroughness they went through, because going back and looking at the events, and I was going back and looking at how information that I was getting as a member of the media, and how meticulous and careful they were about everything that they did. And that's something that as citizens, we need to keep that in mind. And with that point in mind, the other questions that you guys have asked me about, you want my take on the presidential candidates and their reaction, as well as President Obama's speech. And I definitely will give you that kind of feedback. And then on a lighter note, you want some of my feedback on some of the biggest things that are coming up in entertainment here in Southern California. We are approaching what we call in Southern California awards season. And, you know, it starts with People's Choice, and then it goes to the Golden Globes, the SAG Awards, and then you get to the what I call the granddaddy and grandmama of all awards in the awards season, and that's the Grammys and the Oscars. And so you want my take on Grammy nominations, because those came out yesterday. And you want my early thoughts on the Oscar race, the race for Oscar. Who do I think? Because we, as consumers, we seem to get hit with a barrage of movies. And if you're like me, you're seeing all these good movies, at least in titles, coming out. And, someone like me, I think, where were these movies during the summer? Because this summer was a dud. Sorry, Hollywood, but you had dud movies this year. But those are the areas that I'm going to talk about. And getting a little bit back into San Bernardino, because it's such a horrific situation that happened here. And, what has come of this has been much more conversation about dealing with not only because of the individuals who the shooters, and I'm just going to try not to mention them that much because they're all over the place, and I don't think that they deserve any more they don't deserve anything from me or for you, my listener. They committed a heinous act on other human beings, defenseless human beings. And I'm just not going to talk about say their names or anything. They are just going to be called the shooters. As a result of this, here in California, there has been a lot of discussion about what could have happened to prevent this. And I know that there's a discussion about religion. This word that has been tossed around a lot, radicalized, whatever that means. And there's a tendency for people here in America to use that a little bit more when they're talking about the Muslim faith. But people forget to also apply it to other faiths, because there's radicalism, just a week before the San Bernardino incident, Planned Parenthood was under attack by a radicalized Christian. The guy said it, the guy talked about it, and that was religion was his motivation for him to go off on a shooting spree and harm individuals. And so when we talk about radicalization of individuals, and you can look at the facts, and right now the big discussion that everybody's talking about, the big elephant in the room, is gun control. We've just had more weeks out of the year this year of more shootings, and as a country, we've got to do something. We can't sit and do nothing. And I think a lot on social media last week, in terms of a lot of things with a lot of these politicians, like people were saying their thoughts and their prayers, and individuals, other members of Congress were chiding other members of Congress, saying, sometimes prayers after the fact don't mean anything. And in this case, in the case of San Bernardino, in the case of Sandy Hook, in the case of the individuals that lost their lives in the Planned Parenthood attack is absolutely true. It means nothing. It's just something that someone's, it is an empty platitude. And it doesn't solve anything. It doesn't contribute to advancing the human condition at all. And that's what I mean by that. And I don't want people to get into self-interpretation thinking that I'm anti-prayer. And I don't think that Twitter is a prayer, but you know, I'm just a little technical on that. But I think it was Senator Murphy of Connecticut who actually just said prayers are of forgiveness for not doing something. And, you know, that was a strong statement. And, you know, and what's happened here in California is that we have some individuals here in California, they're doing something. And I must say it is 10 times better than doing nothing. And that seems to be the standard of reaction or behavior after these shootings, that it just seems to be everybody gets all enraged, everybody types my thoughts and prayers, go out to the families, blah, 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 but then they don't do anything. And you have family members who have come forward from some of the past tragedies, you know, Sandy Hook. Even here in California, you know, UC Santa Barbara, the situation that happened there. And then, you know, California is, we still have individuals in San Francisco who initially helped get the initial ban on assault weapons. The law firm and downtown San Francisco, I think it's 100 California Street, where a gunman walked in there and opened fire. And then, of course, the poor school children that lost their lives in Stockton, California. This isn't new to California. San Bernardino reminded us how some things need to be done. And then I think with San Bernardino, it just intensified because these individuals, as more information came out about it, they became religiously radicalized. So that even added extra emphasis to it. Here in California, the group, there's a committee that's working on a ballot measure that actually, they're pushing for it to be on the ballot in 2016. And the measure is called Safe Act for All 2016. That's, I guess, the working name of it for this year. And it's a ballot measure. And it's put together by a committee that is supported by that's in support and with some guidance from our Lieutenant Governor, Gavin Newsom. That particular initiative has actually been out. It's been out for a few months already. But just in the last, definitely over the weekend, you know, in the media, sometimes we get press releases and we get other sources that may, in the business on Fridays, we call it the Friday dump. Sometimes things start twirling out of the Friday dump and it leads you to do more research. And over the weekend, actually I did, I started looking at the SAFE Act for All. And this is something that's being put together, it's not being put together for vote by our legislature here in California. This is a ballot measure that's coming straight to the people. And right now it's a petition that they are trying to get the signatures. And for our listeners who are not California residents, one of the things that is pretty common for us is we always see people who are petitioning and asking for signatures. And this is where this particular measure is. And right now, the SAFE Act for All, the committee that's kind of spearheading this, they are doing a lot of education on social media. And that's actually where I, after the Friday dump, I actually started seeing more and more activity on social media. And that's, so that's something that I started looking at. And I will let you know that we will get a representative from the SAFE Act for All. Get them in, and we're going to talk to them, and we'll have, you know, you'll have the opportunity to send me questions. But I want to give you a couple of the major highlights of the SAFE Act. One thing about the SAFE Act is it is designed as what I call an in run around the NRA, because you know the NRA. Most Americans think that the NRA is kind of a group that supports your individual right to bear arms, when technically it doesn't. It pimps your rights. Meaning, when I say it pimps your rights, it pimps your rights for you to be a consumer to buy a gun, because they want you to buy a gun because they get paid every time you buy a gun. They don't care whether or not you have the right to have a gun or not. They want the right to be able to sell you a gun. That's all. They don't care. They don't care what you do with it. They don't want the responsibility. They don't want the liability. Their main customer, or their main customer is the gun manufacturers, not consumers. Most people twist that around. There's some carefully crafted wording that makes people think that your right or ability to take a gun or to own a gun, that it's being threatened, when it's actually not. It's a very sophisticated marketing ploy. So the SAFE Act, how it does an in run around the NRA is, you can have your gun. Fine, you can have your gun. But the SAFE Act is now going to enact the proposal in the SAFE Act is addressing the sale of ammunition. And you know, for years, I have always thought that there has to be a way of looking at ammunition, because people can have the gun. It's what you're obtaining to make the gun go, which is the ammunition. And there, I know there's been discussions over the last 20 years about, you know, regulating ammunition, tracking people, serial numbers of bullets at times of sale and things like that. And currently that doesn't exist. It definitely doesn't exist in California. So the proposal of the SAFE Act is to put in some of these tracking measures that's tied to the sale of ammunition, which I think is great. It also addresses clips, multiple rounds of clips. There's a measure in dealing with assault weapons, which we know assault weapons, because the previous administration, the Bush administration, allowed the act from 1993 to expire. And you know, it's kind of debatable, but definitely the accessibility of assault weapons have made it a little easier for people with ill intents, whether it's intentional, like what we saw in San Bernardino, or what we saw at, in the Planned Parenthood attacks, and even in Columbine. When you think about individuals who have these planned attacks and they somehow obtain assault weapons, it makes you think, what are we doing? And those are the kinds of incidents that we'd like to make a dent in. And then also, the Colorado movie theater, you know, the individual, he was not sane. And there does need to be some kind of screening, mental health screening for individuals, as it ties to weapons. Not just guns, but just weapons in general. I wouldn't even want someone like that to have a sword, even if they collected samurai swords. You know, there are just some people who are, they're not well. But that's one measure, I think, looking at assault weapons. So just in the coming weeks, I am trying to see how I can get us a conversation with someone from the SAFE DAC. And in the interim, so that you can look at it and look at the provisions, you can go to safeactforall.org. And that's safeactforall.org. And it lists all of the components. I kind of gave you a highlight of that. And of course, in fairness of equal time, you know, when I bring in SAFEDAC, I'll also look at credible groups, because, you know, the internet has allowed some people to speak their opinions. And, you know, depending on who you talk to, some of these people think that they're experts, but there are some individuals who do oppose this, and we'll look at all sides. But I did want to let you know that, you know, you wanted my take on kind of the latest news that's going on here in Southern California as a result of last week's incident. The SAFE DAC for All has become the number one political trending topic here in California. And it increases by day as points come out about what the SAFE DAC is trying to do, and also the signatures. So I'll keep track of that, and I'll keep watching it and also watching the signatures. And certainly if you have questions about that, I will answer them in next shows as a follow-up. But moving along to your other question, you asked me about kind of the reactions to the presidential candidates and the president to the event that happened in San Bernardino. I saw President Obama's speech Sunday night, and I felt definitely I was glad he did it, because there's a tendency in the White House sometimes where they, for some things, sometimes it seems like that press, the communications team, sometimes they rely too much on the president to get out information. And with this particular situation, I thought that it was handled properly, and it was great that the president, not only the day before, he used his weekly address to talk about San Bernardino, but then and between when he did his address and when he made his speech Sunday evening, there was just more and more information that we learned about the shooters. And I thought the president made some great points that regardless to your political beliefs, I think as Americans, we have to remember who we are as a country. And one of the things that we can't do is discriminate. And lately, that just seems to be vogue right now. And it's un-American to do that, because you can't be a country based on the principles that people from different backgrounds are here. We don't have a population that's 99.9 homogeneous like some other countries are. We're not made like that, and that is not our intention. It never was our intention. You know, no matter how all of us got here, how diverse we are, and how each of the ethnic groups that are represented here in the United States, and the religions that are represented here in the United States, we all have a right to exist, and no one should discriminate. And That's something that I felt the president did very well to remind us about that. And also, I really appreciate him taking this time to outline and encourage us to think about how we need to address violence. I mean, we are at a point where doing nothing is, it's never been acceptable, but doing nothing yet again is something that we need to stop. And the examples that he provided are basically in your face examples of, yeah, we need to do something about this. And something I didn't know, something that I learned, people who are listed on the no-fly list, they can still go buy a gun. I'm like, hello, that should not happen. And, people who aren't allowed to fly, then they can ride the train. And I don't want somebody like that on a train either. But, we're at a point where we're at a break point here in America where we have to do something, and we have to think about how we're going to curtail this violence and deal with assault weapons. One of the things that I saw today, earlier today, the House of Representatives passed a measure that banned individuals from coming to the United States from Iran, Iraq, and Sudan without visas. Because, if you've ever traveled abroad, the first thing that you do when you travel abroad is, depending on what country that you want to go to, whether it's on vacation or whatever it is, you look at whether or not you have to have some kind of visa before coming, whether it's a tourist visa or an education visa or whatever it is, you have to apply for it. Now, our Congress, the House of Representatives, mind you, that's just one chamber. For this to really get real and be real, both chambers have to do that. And I'm not surprised that the House of Representatives would do something so basically make a posturing move like this, because we're almost near the end of the year and they're about to have their holiday recess, which means they won't be in D.C. and won't be back in those offices, even in the district, until after the first of the year. So they've got to put a stamp on 2015, because 2016, the gauntlet opens, and it's at the presidential race. Everybody in the House of Representatives is up for election. And because, you have parties that control one chamber or the other, there's this tick list that they've got to have. So, that's what this is. And it's a meaningless vote, to be truthful, for you or I. It's trivial. It's stupid. They wasted money. It's a wasted vote. It's not going to happen. And, we have a State Department, we have the FBI, we have the CIA, and they're working. We have to let people do their jobs, and particularly individuals in the field of terror. And in the coming weeks, I've reached out to some experts who we will talk about the threat of terrorism. And we'll talk about it in the context of us as average everyday folk, because sometimes we get a lot of sensationalized information. And then again, it seems like everybody on the internet has become a terrorism expert, or people like to pass around certain things, whether it's these crazy memes or some of these, what I call jackleg websites. They're basically opinion. They're opinion pieces, and they're being pimped off as if they're some legitimate news piece. And a lot of times with some of my friends, and some of those friends are listeners, I will actually say, hey, this isn't a real news site. But some people just want to I think, see things that they want to hear or see things to validate themselves and their feelings. But I'm working to get some real experts so that we can get real facts. But to move along with some of the terrorists, kind of finishing that up with some of your questions about my take, if you saw this morning's Facebook page, the number one trending story in the United States, it started about midnight East Coast time yesterday, and it stayed the number one trending leading news story up until I think it was 4 p.m. West Coast time. So it's 7 for you guys back east. It was about 7 o'clock is when it slotted to number two. But the number one trending story was Donald Trump. And I always try to, when I say something that might not be as flattering about someone, I always try to say something positive. And those of you who've been following from day one, I'm a big fan of the Donald on his business side. I don't really have a problem with the fact that he had money from his family handed to him. I admire his hustle that he, did in business. I really admire the way he raised his kids. I think he did a superb job raising his kids. He's got there's a tendency in wealthy families, some wealthy families, that the kids go off the rails. But his children are on point. And I will say this, it seems like the girls are the Penn grads. Ivanka, she graduated from Penn, and then the youngest daughter is at Penn too, but none of the boys. And who knows what little Barron, he kind of looks like a Harvard man. I don't know why. I just get that vibe about him. So, but I think he's in middle school. So we got a little bit before he gets there. But, keeping that positive swing, I admire the way the man raised his children. And you can see in his children how they are very decent people. On the other hand, with Trump, he's redefined the angry old white man. He's cranky. And for someone to be educated, he has the most, and I have to say, Chris Christie called it. He called it the most ridiculous thing that he has recently said about Muslims, banning them. He's gone from banning them to having Muslims identify themselves. For me to admire someone who raised his children so well just makes me think how was he able to do that and not impart some of his beliefs. It baffles the mind. And I know that his children are a little bit, well, they're a lot different from him. And just in some of their life decisions that they've made good decisions and things like that. It baffles me. I do know that in interviews that he has done so far, he has used the word perform, which makes me think he's entertaining people, it's just risky. And I have to say that his remarks that he's made just in the last 48 hours, and even this morning, he was interviewed on Good Morning America. His remarks are not presidential, and someone like him makes me nervous if he were to ever get into the White House, because he's not rational, and also you can definitely tell he is somebody, he doesn't he doesn't work as well with people. He's used to being the boss, and that's problematic. That's definitely problematic when you're doing things at where you need to be diplomatic. So I don't see that. And then, you know, he's a gentleman of a certain age. He was around when McCarthyism was at its height in the 50s, where a lot of people's lives were ruined. And the fact that he consistently uses xenophobia and religious bigotry while he's on the campaign trail, and how there are people applauding this, I just find that, I find it frightening. And it also kind of makes me think, other parties, which, I kind of wonder about that, about other parties. They're just kind of sitting in the back watching this. And I also think of the RNC. What, you know, are they facepalming every day that he opens his mouth? I mean, he's their front runner. And Donald Trump is the opposite of what the Republican Party's platform is. That's what really gets me in this. And it seems to be a problem for the Republican Party. And I will say that Trump, his behavior is pretty dangerous for the middle class and the poor, in the sense of with this issue, he could actually start off World War III. And to be truthful, you can tell his sons are not going to war, but middle class and poor, your children will be going to war. And that's something that I don't like war in general, but I have a problem with, the well-heeled at how they do these posturings, these phony posturings. And at the same time, he knows his kids aren't going, and he himself didn't serve, and he had multiple deferments, which I don't really get that. And other than he used his privilege to get that, and for someone to have done that, he has no conscience about sending somebody else's child to war. I have a really big problem with that. With the RNC, Donald Trump is kind of being that example that a lot of liberals have always said that the Republican Party is not welcoming, that it's bigoted and racist. And you've got your front runner who has got people rallying around this, and it doesn't fit your principles. So this is going to be something very interesting to watch, particularly in the next 45 days, because we're getting into the primaries, the initial primaries that are coming up. And that's going to be, there's a lot of things that are going to be very telling about this field. And there are pundits that are predicting that, every time before the election year, the front runner never wins and things like that. But this is a completely different race. This is a completely different scenario that the Republican Party has never seen. And I am reaching out to some real Republicans. And when I say real Republicans, they are individuals that are tied to the party. So we're going to have them in here. And that's something that we're going to talk about. And that's a take that I have that I think the Republican Party has right now, they've got a PR problem. They definitely have a PR problem as it relates to minority voters. And, you've got someone who is as divisive as Trump being your front runner. And I will say that, Chris Christie, he's always been that guy that just comes up and just tells people to sit down and shut up. And he just said that what he's doing is ridiculous. And then Jeb Bush, who I actually think he's the establishment candidate, and he's kind of been in the background. He used the words, I think, unhinged to describe Donald Trump. So there should be more that's coming up. And then you know, with Trump now saying that he's going to skip a debate, which I don't really get that, but we'll see. But final thought on just the whole terrorist kind of situation, not only that happened here in Southern California, but just the whole, I think, view on Islam. And, you know, I shared a couple weeks back that, you know, I'm familiar with the faith because I have friends who are Muslim, and I have observed a lot of activities particularly community service activities that a lot of these mosques are involved with. And one thing I will say is I think it's time for a lot of interfaith groups. And I've interviewed, and, you know, just in my course as a journalist, I've interviewed a lot of interfaith groups, and there have been, leadership from mosques that are, have been in attendance, and, you know, and everyone has worked to, make whatever situation that this interfaith group has come together. A lot of times you have a lot of interfaith groups coming together to address things like abject poverty in a community, whether it's working on Skid Row, doing things on Skid Row, things like that, and supporting activities, basically supporting the uplifting of another human being. I've seen it. I think that the community, the Muslim community, is going to have to start being much more active. There are a lot of acts of altruism, and it's actually, I think it's an admirable quality of anyone who does an act and they don't want the fanfare, or they do it in the background, it gets done, but no one knows that it's being done. And I know that there are a lot of Muslims and a lot of Muslim groups who are performing wonderful community service and really helping out the community. And I think it's time for you to mainstream yourselves. And I know, in particularly with that faith, there's, and it's just like my own religion and Catholicism. Sometimes there are certain ethnic groups that represent these religions, and there's a tendency, because of either language or cultural identity, where groups kind of band together and they seem very quiet. Well, I think that whole quietness, you've got to get away from that. And a lot of that just has to do with, there are a lot of people who are not educated on your faith, what's your faith like. So you've got that fear. And then, because you've been people who have, just always been doing the good works and you're very quiet, there are some people that their only association with knowing anything about Muslims or knowing anything about Islam has been in the headlines in their newspapers, or the headlines that have been showing up in a lot of our media. So I would like to think that a lot of groups will be a little bit more vocal. I've reached out to some groups, and we're going to talk with them in the coming weeks about that. So look to that, because what I would be interested to, just on a global scale, is these Arab nations. You know how I have been about Arab nations, particularly Saudi Arabia. They just need to start to step up addressing extremism. And it's the same here in the States. We need to start addressing extremism here with Christianity. Now, moving to the entertainment, and I know I've got just a little bit of time left. With these Grammy nominations, locally here in LA, Kendrick Lamar, he's a local kid. He grew up in Compton, and he scored with 11 nominations, and Taylor Swift came in at 7. And my thoughts on the Grammys, it's definitely going to be a young Grammys. And just moving along quickly, for Oscar nominations, people want to know my thoughts. Right now, I'm feeling four movies, Beast of No Nation, Idris Elba, and Abraham Atah. This is a Netflix-backed film. I'm totally feeling that, not only with the messages, but also with a lot of the realism, on the continent of Africa, there is a child soldier problem. So Beast of No Nation, I've actually seen some of the advertisements on TV. So not only are those of, individuals who are in the industry, you're going to be getting for your consideration kind of reminders about that. But I really hope that this film gets some kind of recognition. Another film that I'd like to see get some recognition is Suffragette. 2016, I'm going to call it right now and tell you right now, 2016 is going to be the year of the woman. I'm not predicting the presidential race, but you're going to see more and more women coming out, stepping out. If there are men out there who are uncomfortable about women speaking, it's going to be a hard year for you. And it doesn't have, right now, in the two major parties, there are two women who are front runners. But also, if you've been with me since the beginning of the show, with the Green Party, they've got a very solid candidate that I'm going to have her come through. Definitely, we're going to get her to come through and talk. But that's going to be something really big. And it's got such a powerhouse cast. In Suffragette, and Carrie Mulligan, Meryl Streep. I mean, Meryl Streep, it's going to be good. And then one of my favorite actresses who is just so versatile is Helena Bonham Carter. She's also in it. So I'm feeling Suffragette. Also The Big Short. Again, with this, this is entertainment, but this is entertainment that art imitates life. The Big Short, addresses basically the crisis, the financial crisis that we're still recovering. That we're definitely much better off than we were. But powerhouse cast, Marissa Tomei, former Oscar winner. Then there's Brad Pitt, Christian Bale, Ryan Gosling, and Steve Carell. I'm feeling this film. I read the book. And, screened it. I thought it was fabulous. And then the other, film, the fourth film that I'm really feeling, and I really feel like it should get Oscar nods too, is Spotlight. And this is, the story about the reporters at the Boston Globe as they started looking at the, the pre-molestation that was going on. That's the best way I could describe it, but it's definitely a powerhouse cast. Mark Ruffalo, absolutely love. Also, Michael Keaton, I mean, I think his role in this is going to be one of, I can't wait to hear the public as the public starts to go see it. Rachel McAdams is also in it. Liv Shriver. And we've got John Slattery and the wonderful Stanley Tucci. These four films I see just in my own, Janet's pick. I see these as good Oscar nominees. So that's all of your questions for this week. We'll be back next week, and definitely stay tuned and catch me on Facebook, Janet Foster, where you get the trending story of the day, and also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Janet D. Foster. And certainly, you're listening to me live right now, but if somehow you missed this show or any other show, please subscribe, and you can subscribe to this show at weplayradio.com. And there are so many other shows that are a part of the weplayradio.com family. And we hope you'll join us. And with this thought, hope you have a wonderful rest of the week. And we'll be right back here at same time. And we will definitely give you real talk for real action. Thank you.